Hello, and welcome back to the ZTKFG podcast. I have changed up a little bit of my setup so that the audio should be a little bit cleaner. What I did was I moved the mic closer to my mouth, and I lowered the input, so the background noise should be kept at minimal. Maybe you can still hear the cat. So let's get right into it. Last episode, which if you haven't listened to, you should go and listen to, because each episode will build off of each other. We talked about how the USG is nothing more than hallucination. And I mentioned that in this episode, I was going to go into how Bitcoin helps serve to break that hallucination. So first, I just want to recap or just talk a little bit more about the USG as a hallucination, just mention some points there. So I remember like one of the first anecdotal ways that I kind of saw this ridiculousness of the USG, and it is really just fucking insanity. So it can kind of make you want to pull your hair out at times, just how stupid people can be regarding this. So the first thing that I remember was I was in California for a bit of time, and it was right around when I don't know if marijuana had become legalized there yet or not, or I think it had become legalized, but they didn't have the stores yet, so you still needed to get this like medical marijuana cards. And I just knew a bunch of people who were trying to get these medical marijuana cards. And they were always just like, yeah, like I went to this shop or this place, but you know, that place was actually a scam. It wasn't the official, you know, it wasn't the real, didn't give me a real license. And the thing is that every single one of them is a scam. Every single, without exception, person that is pretending to be some sort of doctor that takes you in and says, oh, like, you know, are you anxious or something? Okay, then I'm going to give you this piece of paper that says you can buy marijuana. Just give me $50. That person is just a fucking leech, every single one of them. It doesn't, you know, there's people that just, they dress up and they do it so convincingly that the people who are under the USG hallucination think, oh, I found a legit one, you know. And the people who don't play along with the USG mind virus, you know, in a good enough way, if they don't, you know, if they don't make their shit look legit, or they don't, you know, if they're like actors and they don't have a good costume on, the cat, if the stage development team that set up the office didn't do a good enough job, then it's a scam. But if they did do a good job with their acting, if they're wearing the right clothes, if their props are good and everything, then they are the official USG. So that's the only difference, but they're all fucking scammers. And another hilarious, or I don't know if it's hilarious, but observation I made growing up in New York City was there was this, you know, people hallucinate there's a law about how old you have to be to drive. Now there is sort of a moral law, like a reasonable thing. If you see someone who's like 10 years old driving a car in the city, you're going to pull them out of the car because it's just dangerous because the mind's not developed enough to operate a motor vehicle. But, you know, some people are qualified to start driving at 16. Some are never qualified to be a driver. But there's, you know, the consensus on the hallucination of the law about this in New York City is completely broken. So people will tell you with complete confidence that the law is 18. You have to be 18 to get your driver's license in New York City, unlike most of the states where they hallucinate that it's 16. Because the justification for this, well, it's the city or Manhattan, so there it's a little bit more complicated to drive, and they want to have you be a little bit older before you can drive. But the thing is that there's a lot of places that will give you a license for 16, and I know people that got their license at 16 or some places it was 17. And if you go to a different bureaucrat, they're going to give you a different answer as to what the law is. So there's no consensus on what the law is because it doesn't really exist. It's just a hallucination in the mind. And, you know, there's nothing particularly wrong with these kind of hallucinations. For example, we hallucinate. If I would keep up this sort of way I'm describing things, I can say, well, we hallucinate that driving on the right side of the road, you know, that's just a hallucination. It's not a law. It's not a real thing. It's not something found in nature. And so this is something the human mind does, you know, this sort of group consensus hallucination mechanism. It's something that seems to be developed into the brain. And it's, for the large part, like, or many times, it's a good thing. But the USG hallucination is just a symptom of this gone, like, horribly fucking wrong. So that's the little touch-up I wanted to do, or follow-up on the USG hallucination thing. And I'm going to go into, I'm going to continue with it, because we're going to be talking about how Bitcoin serves as a way to break this mind virus. So the next thing before we do that, or the precursor to that, is to talk about the dollar, or what we can refer to as the USDDB. So what the USDDB is it's a distributed database that has accounts with numerical values in them. And it's a, you know, it's a representation of just how anyone, you know, this is just intellectualizing. It's just a way to say how much money a person has. And you can have this in various formats. So the first format is the cash format. So it's a distributed database where you have, you know, like on one column, someone's name, I guess it would be. And then in another column, you have how much money they have. And this money has different formats. There's the cash format. There's the checking account format, the saving account format, the stock market format. And they're loosely related. You can go back and forth between them somewhat to some degree, but not fully. And this database is something that's a useful tool as money that exists, and it's separate from the USG mind virus, kind of. So it in and of itself is just a database that's used as money by, you know, everyone in North America and in other parts of the world as well. And when I say everyone in North America, I mean the United States territory. But Canada uses, you know, you can really consider, I guess, all of NATO, all of the, you know, you can kind of look at, like, the mixed cultures. So Europeans and Canada and the States and some other countries as well that kind of get along, Australia, I don't know. All these countries that are culturally intermingled each have, like, the version of the USDDB, and they might be euros or Canadian dollars or Australian dollars or whatnot. But they kind of are pretty similar. Like, these sort of thin lines of separation that, you know, they pretend to have exchange rates are actually pretty similar to the difference between cash in the United States and a checking account in the United States. They're kind of slight variations on the same database. Anyways, the database itself is just an account of numbers, but what gives it credibility is its connection with the USG mind virus. So this database run by not really anyone, but there's sort of groups that control it, you know, the Federal Reserve and whoever the higher ups are in there, and then, you know, whoever controls the actual databases in the banks and you know, however that hierarchy structure is, that banking system advertises itself as the official database of the USG mind virus. So the mind virus and this database sort of play off of each other to give each other strength. You know, the United States government, the people who pretend to be part of this group, they kind of sanction the dollar, and the dollar in turn sanctions them. And this USDDB is a useful thing even if you're not under the mind virus. So, you know, if you take you might totally think that this United States government shit is completely bonkers, but you're still incentivized to use the USDDB. Because, I mean, if you were in some island and people were hallucinating that leaves of a certain tree had value, and you might say that's insane because these guys on their farm grow these trees and they grow these leaves, so you're working for these leaves, but these guys over there can just grow the leaves, and also they keep the seeds and they shoot anyone who tries to grow the tree. So you'd say that's nuts to collect these leaves. But if everyone is willing to trade goods and services, whatnot, for the leaves, then even if you're not under the hallucination that these leaves have value and you think it's ridiculous, you may, as a reasonable person, still have incentive to get them. And when it comes to the dollar, it's the same thing. You know, even if you see the USG mind virus as something ridiculous, if everyone you know is willing to give you food, whatever, you know, house and rent, blah, 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 for the dollar, then you yourself are incentivized to become one of the collectors of the dollar. And then if there's a third person who kind of goes along and says, well, now there's these people hallucinating that the USDDB has value and they're always trying to get it. And then there's a second guy who's not hallucinating that, but he's also trying to get the USDDB. Then I'm also going to try and get, you know, it just goes on ad infinitum. But still, it's important to know there's a fine line between being like this reasonable person and actually hallucinating yourself. And so you got to be careful, I think, of crossing that line. Because, yeah, you can really get sucked into this mind virus. People who want to destroy this USG mind virus, one way is they can try to attack the USDDB. Because it's really the thing, you know, like, on a day-to-day basis, you are wrapped into the USG's world, mostly because of the USDDB. You are always in a situation where to get anything done, to get anyone to do anything, because, you know, people are literally under a spell, and the way that they operate is they won't perform actions unless they get credited with tokens in the USDDB. So if you want to tell someone to do something to work for you, you're going to need to get these demon tokens of the USDDB. And so people who want to destroy the system, they can, you know, try and make some alternative to the USDDB, or, you know, before Bitcoin they would try to, but they can't, because the thing is, for all the problems of the world, the USDDB actually to some degree works. The whatever mind controllers, slave masters, whatever you want to call them, who are in control of the monetary supply, they know how to balance it, so at least it doesn't run away in a lifetime. I mean, it really has been going on for a long time. I mean, it keeps inflating, but they're able to always, stay on top, where they can always tell people to do something, because they inflate the money, but they don't break the whole system completely. So, people have been trying to attack the USDDB and get people out of the money mind religion, whatever. But it's not so easy to do, because they, like, everything when it gets denominated in the USD, just, you know, they can't do what's called a speculative attack onto the USDDB, or they can't do an effective one. So what I mean by that is that they can't get any item or anything in the world to drive up to sort of an infinite price in terms of the US dollar. anytime, say, carrots or whatever market or ever whatever item on the market got starts to get expensive in terms of dollars, the market will just come and supply more of that. So, you know, if there's like the carrot price goes up to $10 a carrot or something, people are just going to farm more carrots and bring it down. And of course, over time, they lose this war. Like over whatever 200 years, the carrots will become, you know, just a normal carrot will probably cost $100 or $1,000 or $10,000. But it doesn't happen fast enough for people to get broken out of the game of always trying to collect the USD. But then comes Bitcoin, which does finally allow us to perform a speculative attack. And Bitcoin's interesting because in terms of everyone who wants to destroy the USG, like Bitcoin has this really great way to advertise itself amongst all the noise of all propaganda everywhere, because there, you know, this goes back to the whole Byzantine generals problem or whatever. There's tons of people who want to attack this system, but we don't know how to coordinate, or we didn't. And also, we don't know what signals to pay attention to. But when Satoshi came along, he said, more or less, here's a hash function, SHA-256 function. And with this function, you know, it's a cryptographic function. So given H of X is equal to Y, and you if you know Y, you have no way to find X. And on top of that, if you're like given a random X, you're not going to know what H of X is until you run the function, the double SHA-256 function. And then he says, he says what a cryptographic function is. And then he says, on top of that, I have an X such that H of X starts with like this many leading zeros and like a chain of those, you know, there's the blockchain, the hash, the proof of work, whatever. And so when you are just a random derp searching the internet, seeing the trillions of nonsense messages that you get all the day throughout the day, and then you see this one message that's like 00000000000AFA6 whatever hexadecimal representation of the block hash, and if you know what a SHA-256 function is, then that's kind of interesting, because you know that someone has forfeited a lot of mechanical work to broadcast a message, and you say, hey, what is this? And it's sort of just like a single, like some beacon of light signal saying, this is something you should pay attention to. And then you follow up with it, and you see, okay, this is like some monetary system with a fixed supply. And I think to anyone reasonable who sees this ridiculous fucking hallucination of the USG, and they see this signal that is strong from its properties, and it's a system that can be used as a monetary system with a fixed supply, this is the game that you should play. It's kind of the natural shelling point. And so now we have something where we can perform a speculative attack on the dollar. So when you get into the world of Bitcoin, there's two things that people are doing. The first is they're just investing to make their own personal material wealth. Because when you go into the Bitcoin like game, you know, when it was released, it's just so underpriced because it's a much, much, much better monetary system. And it will one day, or it already kind of has, but it'll finish completing taking over all the wealth that's in the USDDB system. And so from a personal level, when you invest in Bitcoin, you gain your personal material wealth. But on a higher level, you know, when you're not just thinking about yourself, when you're kind of thinking about the bigger problems in the world of more or less the slavery and just destroyed life created by the USG, when you buy Bitcoin, you're doing something greater, which is you're participating in the speculative attack. And when all the order books are cleared on all the exchanges, then I am 100% sure that there will be a massive, massive mind shift in the world. Because all of a sudden, these people who, really idiots, hallucinate, are so wealthy, like, I don't know, Jeff Bezos or whatever, they'll start to see, like, well, you know, if they're so wealthy, I mean, maybe Jeff Bezos also holds Bitcoin or whatnot, but they're going to start to see, well, these people who are so, like, nominatively fiat rich, why can't they buy any Bitcoins at all? And to add on to that, you know, when you own just enough Bitcoin to afford a transaction fee and a little more, so you need to you know, for what I'm about to describe, you need to have more than a little bit more than a transaction fee worth of Bitcoin, you know, like I would say 10 times as much as a transaction fee. You're spiritually richer than anyone who has a USD DB, you know, a million units in the USD DB with, and at the same time has no Bitcoin. So if there's someone in the world who has $1 million and no Bitcoin, and you have just a little bit of Bitcoin more than being able to pay a transaction fee, then on a spiritual level, you are infinitely richer than the person in the USD DB. Because the person in the USD DB is a financial slave. They don't actually have control and sovereignty over their money. They might have a much better life than you, because in the current moment, while their masters allow them, they can use that money to get more material goods or whatever they want. But on a spiritual level, they're poorer than you. You can take this, like, look at it from this perspective. If you were back in the slave times in the States, like the, you know, the African American slaves, they, a lot of them lived actually a decent life. You know, they were in slavery, but they may have lived in a really nice mansion in the South. And maybe some of the house slaves I know did not have to work that hard. They were slaves, but they lived in a huge, nice house. They were friends with the slave owners. You know, it wasn't all, I mean, of course, many slave owners probably did whip and treat their slaves horribly. But a lot of times it was just kind of like more or less the casual employee work, and they were buddies. And so you can compare the, like, millionaire in the USDDB to a house slave in a really nice mansion that doesn't have to work that hard. And you can compare the person with just a little bit more than a transaction fee as, like, a free man in the United States in the 1700s who, you know, owned a shitty little bar and was kind of like a day-to-day worker. So that free man wasn't a slave, but he had less wealth than the slave who is a slave. So to me, like, I would never trade my Bitcoins even for $1 billion. You know, I mean, I would, given that I can immediately buy back more Bitcoins than I have today. But on a spiritual level, the Bitcoins are really important to me. That's my little ink. That's my ink to the history book of the blockchain. So that's a little side note about the spiritual aspect of owning Bitcoin. But back to the speculative attacks. When we now have the ability to group together and message any single person. Every single person can be part of this. We can go and attack the order books and just try and wipe them. Just this is, you know, the most like throwing a Molotov cocktail into the banks thing you can do in a financial perspective is just go and buy every single Bitcoin that you possibly can and tell all your friends to do it. Tell everyone you know, tell your friends of friends of friends. And this is a great way to burn the ship down. So yeah, when you buy Bitcoins and you hold Bitcoins, you are doing the good work of breaking faith of the USG in addition to making yourself money. So it's really a obvious decision to do. Even if you lose your coins because you lose your private key, you'll still have participated in the fight. So you can still go to sleep at night knowing that you've done something right in the world. Adding on to that, it's important to remember that this is a financial war. And, you know, this podcast is meant for motivating action in myself and for anyone who's listening to it. So in this financial war, the people on the side of Bitcoin are absolutely in the moral right. And because of that, we can lose sight, we can be too cautious on, or we're cautious about doing the right thing. So we can see something that may look to be the wrong, to like be doing the wrong thing, but it is the right thing. So what do I mean by that? So the enemy, the people who want to keep this USG mind virus alive for God fucking knows what reason, because they don't even benefit from it. They're just like self-hating psychopaths. They steal Bitcoins from people and dump them on the market. So we work so hard to clear these order books, to buy them, to, you know, deal with fucking horrible, awful, bureaucratic bullshit working in the fucking tech world. You know, because that is like a huge portion of, that's my own experience and a huge portion of Bitcoin people, because the people who find out about Bitcoin are people who are interested in cryptography and computer science. So we happen to be in the tech world. So we put up with all the fucking bullshit of working in the whole VC circus, Silicon Valley scam ring, so that we can clear the order books. And then some fucking US agent goes, steals a laptop of some guy, Ross Ulbricht, and dumps like 100,000 coins. So like huge numbers of man hours and everything get wrecked in one swoop of the USG. And that's not even where their scam stops. Like, they do everything possible to keep the order book alive. Everything possible. I mean, this is another point that you have to get into. The exchanges, they exist to keep the USDDB alive. If they disappear, the price goes to 999999999999. I mean, you are really inside the USG mind virus if you think that exchanges help our cause. Because, and you also don't do your own personal trading. Because I run a small little exchange, just a peer-to-peer thing, and I would love to charge $1 million per Bitcoin, but I can't. Why can't I? And I have no fucking competition. I have no competition maybe in the whole of Costa Rica. I have maybe, like, the people who are my competition, I know every single one of them, maybe. And they're at most one degree away from me. And I know that every single one of them, if I tell them, they will be happy to agree to hold the price at $1 million. Or at least 500,000. They're smart people. They're hardworking people. They will find another way to get USDDB if they need to. But the only reason that we can't do that is because if we try to hold the price at 500,000 or $1 million and say we will not sell for less than that, people will say you're nuts, because they can. It's totally possible to go to Coinbase or whatever fucking USG, USDB interface that's up they can go there and they can actually turn their, you know, they have to give their passport and whatever, but they can turn the USDDB tokens into Bitcoins. So we, the Bitcoin people, want the exchanges to go away, not the other way around. The exchanges breaking is exactly what it means for the price to go to the moon. And the follow-up to the price going to the moon is that the USG mine virus gets severely crippled. I'm not 100% sure that it'll destroy it. Like, maybe some people will just find a way. They will find a way to keep hallucinating it until maybe there is actually a bloody war. But it's a good start to absolutely destroy their currency. So, with that being said, there is no doubt that it is the moral right to do everything possible to destroy these piece of shit exchanges that are interfacing the USDDB with Bitcoin. The Bitcoin people do not need this at all. The dollar people need it because they need to keep up the hallucination that their database is worth anything. And so these operatives of the USG will take their coins that they steal and they'll dump them on the market, and then they'll make fake paper BTC, they'll make fake whatever GBTC, and they'll promote tons of altcoins. They'll do everything to prevent the speculative attack from going on, and they're very good at it. And they're, you know, even though the price is now $40,000 or whatever, and they're definitely losing this, so this is the one, you know, good hope we have. By the way, the price might actually be like, you know, the enemy, the people who control the USDDB, they can float the price higher to what it is naturally on the market at any moment with the exchanges, because they could, you know, if there's really no drive to buy the Bitcoins, they can still raise the price and then later dump it while they control the exchanges. But that's a side note, and I don't think that they're trying to float the price higher than it is, although there is you know, you always have to be careful about that. So while the exchanges are around, I would say that, you know, you definitely don't want to buy for, you always want to try and buy for as cheap as you can. You don't want to try and like buy, you know, be like, oh, I'm nobly paying $100,000 per Bitcoin because I'm trying to change the volume weighted average. That's very stupid. You should definitely try and get the coins as cheap as you can, always. And if for whatever reason there's manipulation in the other direction where the price is going up, even though that's the ultimate goal, that's a short-term mistake. The goal is just to actually just get as many Bitcoins from the exchange as possible in terms of Bitcoins. So that's about it for today. That's all I wanted to say, that when you're buying Bitcoins, you are not just setting yourself up to make fat loot, but you're also doing the morally right action of taking the Bitcoins away from the exchanges. Burning them is not a, you know, you could, you know, be like for the cause, for the Republic, and just send them to a burnt address, but that's pretty fucking stupid, because if we can keep the Bitcoin, you know, the Bitcoin hallucination is the driving on the right lane road. It's a good hallucination. If we can keep that hallucination going, we want to have as many coins in circulation as possible, because then we can actually fund projects and fund real world shit and grow shit. So if you have like, if we have the hallucination that the Bitcoin price is worth what the equivalent of, you know, 500,000 USDDB tokens are worth today, then we want to have 21 million coins, all of them in circulation, so that we can fund as much projects as possible. But yeah, anyways, so don't do anything stupid like burn your coins. But keep up the good fight, and for yourself and for the good of destroying the USG, do everything you can to clear the order books and play dirty if you can. I mean, you know, there's not, you're definitely not, you might be, you might get in trouble for this. You might get arrested. You might get, you might have like in your physical body or whatever, your physical quality of life might go down from doing something like, stealing or taking credit cards and trying to wipe the order books by stealing a bunch of debit cards and purchasing and making fake accounts. But you're definitely in the moral right for doing that. You know, I can't say I recommend that because of the personal consequences you might find yourself in if you don't take good care. But I will say that that is absolutely the moral right, and that we are in a financial war where the other side will do way dirtier things than that. So that's the kind of mindset that you should be going into with when it comes to helping clear the order books. So that's all I have for today. And I don't know what will be on the next episode. I don't really want to just always talk about Bitcoin because that's what it's always on my mind and it's the most important thing. But I want to mix it up a little bit. So next episode, I might talk about moral relativism, and why it's really fucking stupid. But I don't know. I don't have a clear plan. So anyways, thank you for listening, and I wish you luck in your quest to obtain as many bitcoins as possible.